6 minutes after nine. Good morning and welcome to the rave edition of the Eusebius McKayzer show. I hope that you are in a good mood this morning. We start the show with an open line. You set the agenda by calling us and telling us what it is that you'd like us to debate, to discuss. 011-883-0702. And in Cape Town, I wonder how many actual new listeners we still get on a daily basis, eh? I'm sure you all know the number by now. Do you know the number? Can you finish? 021-446. What follows after that? 0567. So that's the number in Cape Town. 021-446-0567. And in Johannesburg, 011-883-0702. Remember last week, Karabaholeng just rattling off the number. Eh? That's loyalty right there. And of course, you can also engage us on social media platforms. What do we have in store for you? Okay, at 10 o'clock, I ask the following question. Is ancestral worship compatible with Christianity? And I want to know what you think. I do neither. So I'm just going to have popcorn while the rest of you are fighting. Those of you who think the answer is no. Those of you who think the answer is yes. And those of you who will go, I don't know. It depends. I'll moderate that debate. I'll ask all of the cheeky questions. And I've got two excellent guest that will be with me in studio and a couple more that will join us on the line. And of course, you are going to be front and center of their conversation. I'm looking forward to having Ikliga. I can click mother. Did you hear that? Ikliga. Pelokazi Matlingozi will be joining me, who is both a Sangoma and a Christian. And then Mashlati Winston is going to be with me in studio as well. He is Amazeballs, director of Revi Zacharias International Ministries in Africa, on his way to the studio as we speak. And he's got a very different view to Pelokazi. Pelokazi thinks that, in fact, yeah, there is compatibility there. In fact, the very question that I'm framing for some people is irritating because it sets up a tension that they don't even think is worth discussing. Whereas very particular practices like slaughtering of animals, trying to appease your ancestors, Mashati thinks that you cannot be a Christian and engage in such. And then I've got a couple of other folks that we will put in throughout that hour with different positions to the two of them. So have a think about that. Start discussing it around the water cooler in the office. Is ancestral worship or ancestral belief compatible with Christianity or with, some other kind of faith in general? And we will unravel that in the middle hour of the show between 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock. And then it is time for the monthly lit quiz in our literature corner at 11 o'clock. Can't wait. I'm going to play with you. I have not looked at the questions. They've been compiled by my wonderful producers, and we'll see how I get on. I'll try not to look at the answers and cheat. And we'll see whether you and I can do better than the contestants that will be with us in the studio. But in the first hour of the show, it's all over to you. And you are quiet today. Why are you quiet? Hey, it's Thursday. My lines are not blazing. Have I lost you again? Can you hear me? Is there a signal problem? Hey, why are you not calling in? Okay, let me provoke you. Not as in, being contrarian. Provoke you into a beautiful conversation. Those of you who follow me on social media, you've seen me proselytizing about this book. And I feel so sorry for my producers. I'm always telling them what to read. Nothing more irritating than people telling you what to read when you have your own pace at which you are reading and your own preferences for books as well. But I think in particular, firstly, I want to recommend this book to you, Reedy, if you are listening. Eloquent Rage, A Black Feminist Discovers Her Superpower by Brittany Cooper. I mean, every single person who even vaguely shares overlapping politics with me, you'd love this book. And if you hate everything that I'm about, you'd love this book because it will give you an insight into the kind of things that drive me. This is another one you must read, mother, on your to-do list. Eloquent Rage. Isn't that just a beautiful title? Eloquent Rage. It's a bit like How to Steal a City. You want to buy the book just for the title. You know, when a title works, it really works. Now, I have been putting up quotes to tease people to make sure that they have FOMO. And the FOMO has worked. I see the book is available locally. Probably only at exclusive books, I think, sadly. And I say sadly because you know that I'm on a mission to destroy their monopoly. If there are independent bookstores that have stock of Eloquent Rage by Brittany Cooper, please tell me so that I can also direct my wonderful community of book reading listeners to go and buy this book at your independent bookstore so that we can make the circle bigger in terms of who profits in the book industry. I digress. Here is one of my favorite things from this stunning woman, and I confess I didn't know about her existence until my boyfriend bought this book for me in America and brought it back. Those are my favorite gifts when it comes from his travels. And she writes the following. And just before we lost Megan to the public broadcaster, how's it, Megan? One of you wrote to Megan and you made a very good suggestion, which we actually forgot, Marva, to execute because there's just too much to do in life. And someone has suggested, you see, Biz, I don't mind listening to your show, but sometimes you guys use language and like the rest of us feel excluded because these things just roll off your tongues. For example, toxic masculinity. Like, what the hell is that? Whiteness? What is that? And I think that's a fair point. I can't say we're going to have a corner to explain that stuff because the show's already overly choreographed. But on an ad hoc basis, we will try and help you out. Now, what wasn't in that person's example is another phrase that I tend to bandy about quite a bit. And I actually thought this morning, you know what? Why don't you start the show if the open line is slow by addressing one of the bits of language that we sometimes use a lot in South African discourse as political analysts, but we don't explain it. And you know what it is? Structural inequality. We always talk about structural, you know, that word, it's become quite commonplace. And there is a passage here in Eloquent Rage that sums it up beautifully. And I want to read this. So listen up. Producers, you can even take a break from the phone lines there and just appreciate this paragraph. And this comes from Eloquent Rage, A Black Feminist Discovers Her Superpower, Brittany Cooper, on page 266. Just one paragraph. She swears a lot, so I'm going to have to make sure that I don't swear you and behave like Karima does. Being asked to do more with less is inhumane. Frequently, social scientists point to the resilience of children from difficult backgrounds. One time, in a meeting on my campus, in a discussion about the hardships children of color face, a white woman remarked dismissively, "Oh, but children are resilient." Celebrating the resilience of poor folks is a perverse way of acknowledging the unreasonable demands placed upon people who are already struggling to make it. In fact, in this moment, when a broad-scale conservative backlash threatens to absolutely gut the social safety net, resilience is a dangerous word. The logic of relying on people's resilience goes something like, "Let's just see how much we can take away from you before you break." That, S-H-I-T, is evil. We can celebrate and recognize the awesome ways that black humanity and possibility show up without drinking the Kool-Aid. My mother is my shero. I'm the biggest beneficiary of her ingenuity and tenacity, but I don't mistake the model my mother carved for me for a liberation plan for all black people. Nor is it reasonable to blame all the folks who didn't do what she did for their own social condition. You can't, and here's the crux of it, the kicker, you can't judge the effectiveness of a system by the success of its exceptional actors. From the president on down. I mean, it's just stunning, isn't it? On page 266 over to 267, if you want to check it out, Eloquent Rage, Brittany Cooper. Now, here's the point that she's making. When I say there's structural injustice in our country, what I mean is stop telling us that, oh, well, if Eusebius can manage to rise above his circumstances, be resilient, why can't you? Why can't Abel also have a master's degree in philosophy if Eusebius can and they were neighbors in the township? Because the exceptionalism, or as Brittany Cooper says, the resilience that some of us have as statistical minorities living under conditions of poverty, that doesn't change the structures that make it impossible for the majority to have a reasonable shot of actually realizing their potential. And I thought that's such a beautiful point. It's an absolutely beautiful point, and we do this all the time. We love talking about resilient individuals, about exceptional individuals, and we don't deal with the structures that make it hard for the average Joe to be able to realize their potential. You know when we do it the most? With matric results. Every January, we're on some, oh, Marva comes from a village in Limpopo with like poor sanitation, no lab, and is the top science student in the country. What is the subtext? Why are you not succeeding? I know you're in a mud hut, but like you can also then get an A for science. No, the resilience and the exceptional achievement of the individual doesn't change the fact that structurally they live under conditions of poverty. No one should have to be exceptional. Everyone should have enough ingredients to have a decent shot with some effort to be able to reach their potential. 17 minutes after 9, let's talk about structural injustice. Do you get it now? And you want to have a conversation about it? I'm all ears. I'm going to take your calls on the other side of this. 19 minutes after 9, it is an open line, and I wonder what's on your mind. 021-446-0567, Cape Tonians, join the conversation. And Joe Biggers on 011-883-0702. I mean, anyone can, doesn't matter where in the universe you are. You can also tweet me your thoughts. Sabu says that paragraph, yo, I'm getting that book this weekend, Eloquent Rage. Go get it, dude. You will love it. Mokone, you obviously are a loyal listener of the show. And give him a round of applause for his close listening, which is one of my other favorite things to say. Mokone tweets the following. First time I heard you say boyfriend. It's not the first time I've said it, but I will still give you applause, shame, just for listening closely. And the rest of his tweet says, you always refer to my partner. Yeah, this morning in the shower room when I thought about how to start the show, I just thought, you know what? My partner is, I don't know, it's if my partner was yogurt, it would be plain yogurt. Like, why? You know, and I don't do plain. So, yeah, nicely spotted. Thank you. Thank you. Hello, Richard.
Morning. You're on a roll. You're on a roll.
Yeah, no, I'm handing the baton over to you. The floor is yours.
What did you have for breakfast? Okay, I was very impressed with your program yesterday with Kristen Oliver.
Yeah, isn't he a wonderful gift? The honesty that, yes. You know, yeah. And what, you know what we didn't get to before you tell me what you are, you called in, Richard. We didn't get to some aspects that would have scared people if they knew more. I mean, to the point where this man has had to add bodyguards around PE. His life was also in danger. It's serious business to speak out against the thugs.
Yeah. No, I get it. And yeah, I was hoping you'd get there. But the thing that concerns me, Sebius, is he uses the words all the time, shocked, horrified, gobsmacked, whatever, at what was going on. But people were calling this, and not just in PE, for years and years and years, and it just got worse and worse and worse. Mm. But nobody would listen because it wasn't politically expedient.
Yes.
And what was happening was that the new pigs were shouldering out the apartheid pigs to get their noses in the trough.
Yeah.
And this is something that a lot of people are going to start kind of using to kind of say, wow, isn't it awful? But actually, you were told. And we know who was doing the telling and how often and in what form. You just need to go into the Star and the Sunday Times archives. Mm. They would not listen. Mm. And take what they want to know.
I think you're spot on. And in addition to that, we still don't have on the horizon the prospect of justice, because the justice sector itself have been hollowed out.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, we've seen, actually, it's a wonderful series for somebody to make on a kind of box office basis.
Yes.
We've seen the hollowing out of a nation in the state capture, an incredible story. Mm. We've then seen the hollowing out and destruction of city economics, and therefore you talk about structural inequalities, it's gotten worse. Mm. But we've also seen it less visibly in businesses, telecoms businesses, mining houses. So this thing runs right through to the sewage system.
That's right. What a beautiful intervention. You're on a roll yourself. Spot on. I've got nothing to add.
Almonds for breakfast. Okay, mate, have a good day.
Lovely. Thank you, Richard. Thanks so much for that beautiful thought. Spot on. Justice, good morning. Cooey. Are you there, Justice?
Oh, hello. How are you? Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm good, man. That was a very long grammatical pause, unless you were eating amaguinha or something.
No, not at all. I did not hear you at all.
Askiz. Go ahead. The mic is yours.
Thank you, Eusebius. Eusebius, I'm trying to just get from you and maybe other listeners, you know, some assistance here about something called enthusiastic consent when it comes to sex. So I have come to hear of this concept that for sexual intercourse to take place, the woman must have enthusiastically said yes or consented in one way or another. Now, the dilemma that I have with this understanding.
Can you, before you tell me the dilemma, can I just say that I'm smiling, and I know that if she is listening, unless she is consulting, Dr. Eve is smiling as well. Hey, look at you, Justice from Sunnyside, being all woke, talking about enthusiastic consent. Hey, we don't do war shames. We don't do war shames on the show, but we do applauses. Give him an applause there before he tells us the dilemma. Yeah, enthusiastic consent. I'm going to make woke men out of straight black men yet in this country. Now, what is the dilemma?
The dilemma, Eusebius, is there any room for persuasion when it comes to sex?
Okay.
If she starts by saying no, I mean, you know, things are getting, you know, whatever. Is there no room whatsoever to say no, but, you know, please, let's do this, let's... That's the dilemma I have, and I'm not trying to be fine. I'm just trying to understand so that I do not become a potential rapist or whatever. Because the world that we live in, it's very hard to, you know, to engage without some form of persuasion, almost 99% of the time. So is there room for persuasion? Or the moment she says no, you must just...
Zip
up and leave.
I just think your question is so beautiful. I don't even know where to begin. I just want to give you a hug for even thinking about this, which I think is an excellent question, including the fact that, as you say, in the everyday ways in which we interact, not just in the bedroom, there's always an element of little bit of persuasion. Can I get you to go to the shop? Can I get you to agree where we will go on holiday? Can I persuade you to come over and visit me in hospital and bring me the, you know, I don't know, a bowl of fruit? Like persuasion, not in the unlawful, unethical, violent form, is an important part of human interaction. I get your dilemma completely. Can I ask you this as we wait for other people to give up, to try and help you puzzle through your dilemma? As you are thinking about how to square enthusiastic consent with your instinct to try and persuade Eusebius when he says no to maybe change his mind, what have you done with that dilemma? How has it affected your actual interaction with women? Ah, we've lost him there. Are we still, do we have you, Justice? Okay. Because I was very keen to know whether this has stopped him from having sex. Does he walk out of the room after the first no, or has he actually tried to persuade his partner? I think we need to accept the spirit with which Justice is asking his question. Justice is clearly being very progressive. I think we can accept that. Please don't bite his head off. He doesn't want to be a rapist. He understands consent. And in fact, he's embraced this notion of enthusiastic consent. And I think that's beautiful. So he wants to know from us collectively, what does that mean? If orally says no the first time, does enthusiastic consent stop me from being able to even try and persuade her to change her mind? Eh? Give us a call and let's engage on Justice's question. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, in Cape Town, on 021-446-0567.
702 and Cape Talk. Open line.
Oliver, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Eusebius. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I actually so badly want to respond to Justice's question because I've been thinking about consent quite a lot myself, and we've engaged on it quite a couple of times.
Is this Oliver? Oliver?
Yeah, Oliver Dixon.
It's lovely having you on the open line. But, okay, put that question aside. I know you've got strong views on that and interesting views, I must say, as well. But why did you call in the first place?
Yes, I called in to respond to your provocation.
Yes.
You know, I've always had this belief that, you know, exceptionalizing black excellence is anti-black, you know? And yeah. I think the author you quoted there puts it across quite beautifully. The last time I was on your show, we had a conversation about Black Panther. And
that's right,
you put
yeah.
the question, am I excited for it? And I was like, no, not really, because it's going to create the narrative, or it's going to at least stir the narrative that black child, it's possible.
Yeah.
And when you create the message and people start believing the message, but the structure doesn't allow for that to become a reality.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
What you do in that instance, you force people into a situation, especially minorities, whether you're black, women, Asian, whatever the case may be, you force people into thinking they're particularly not good enough, or that they particularly are not working hard enough, and not that the system was designed against them.
That's right.
People like fall into you know, have horrible self-esteem, fall into episodes of depression, and, you know, oftentimes that is the reality of suicide amongst black professionals, really, because of exactly of that narrative. And I think we need to do away with it. I think, you know, I think it's possible. I think black, every time a black person succeeds, it's never to do with you know, only their talent. I think it's their talent coupled with a great deal of luck. So any black rich person out there can't tell you that they're rich without 100%. Having to accredit luck for their wealth or whatever 100%. The excellence is.
110%. Couldn't have put it better. And then this thing is so bad in our communities. You know that even people who won't use the framework that you and I have used to describe this thing, it is in our moms, in our dads, in our siblings' vocabulary. You will hear it on. They will say, "Hukum kanyini suzi CBS
asi."
Yeah.
Well,
no. UCBS should not have been, it shouldn't have had to be UCBS. You can't say, "Oh, why can't you be like Oliver?" Oliver shouldn't have had to be Oliver.
Yeah.
And you know, Oliver, if we add in one more thing, right, which I know will also make a lot of people possibly upset, we also have to accept that actually the average person has got average genes.
Yeah.
So it is particularly 100%. Important to dismantle structural injustices and inequalities, because the average person shouldn't have to dig deeper than the gene pool allows them to do.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and this is going to be quite controversial. I think, you know, and it's quite a popular thing to say amongst my friends and my circles, but every time a white person is hailed as excellent, oftentimes they're quite mediocre. You know, every time a man is hailed as excellent, oftentimes that man is quite mediocre. And I think, but when it comes to minorities, the excellence pool has to be so much higher for them to just break through. I love Trevor Noah, but he's a pure accident.
Okay, you're certainly the cat amongst the pigeons. Brilliant intervention. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thanks, my friend. Do you agree with Oliver? I think he's on point. 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. In the meantime, orally, hashtag excellence. What is the latest in EWN headlines?
Eusebius, the Gauteng government will hold a briefing today on the deadly Joburg building fire. As firefighters continue to battle that blaze, three firefighters died trying to extinguish the blaze at a building housing government departments. The fire started on the 23rd floor and spread to the 16th floor. Deputy President David Mabuza is back in Parliament today to brief members of the NCOP on progress achieved by the Interministerial Committee on Land Reform. The committee provides political oversight and oversees the implementation of Cabinet's decisions on land reform. And India has decriminalized gay sex following a top court ruling. The Supreme Court heard petitions challenging the constitutional validity of a colonial era law under which same-sex relationship is an unnatural offense punishable by a 10-year jail term. The court rules that any discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation violates fundamental rights. Those are the headlines, the Eyewitness News and more at 10 or as it happens.
EWN Traffic.
At the moment, if you are heading towards the Joburg CBD, roadworks are causing about a 30-minute delay on the M2 West between Cleveland and the Crown Interchange. At this stage, rather use Main Reef Road as an alternative. There's also bumper-to-bumper traffic on the N1 South. That's between the Buccleuch Interchange and William Nicol. You can expect about a 20-minute delay through there. In the Pretoria CBD, Francis Bart has been closed off to traffic at Sisulu due to an earlier accident. As a result, several roads are gridlocked in the CBD, and this includes Sophie de Brain, Francis Bard, Pretoria Street, Sisulu, Thabo Sehome, as well as Nanasita. While in Cape Town, look out for an accident scene on Philip Hosana Drive. This is inbound near Rueda Bloom Road. While on the N2 inbound, traffic is heavily backed up. You can expect about an hour delay there, approaching Robert Sobukwe. You can also expect about a 30-minute delay on the N1 inbound between Monte Vista and the elevated freeway. And there's also about a 30-minute delay on the M3 inbound at Weinberg Hills. Garabuch Ali, EWN Traffic.
702 and Cape Talk. Open line.
Beautiful open line, eh? Stunning. Nkosana, good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's Trevor here.
Yes, you want to respond to Justice's question about enthusiastic consent.
Okay, awesome. Well, that's very simple in my mind. I think there's no ambiguity there where the line can be drawn. Because as long as you use words to try and persuade the other person, that is perfectly acceptable. But once you start using physical force, then you have a problem. So to me, there's no ambiguity there at all. That's the one thing I wanted to comment on.
Okay, hold on there. Slow it down a little bit. Let's have a chat.
Okay.
I don't have a clear view on this. I love the question so much that my mind is not in solution mode. So I'm going to be thinking with you on this one. The thing about language is, remember when we were talking about, I just forget one of the brilliant, I just have so many author interviews. I had one author who spoke about the horrific way in which she had been sexually preyed on, including by her father, and she didn't realize it because he never did anything physical.
Yes.
But she then discovered as an adult a concept called verbal grooming.
Yeah.
And it was a light bulb moment for me when we had that conversation. Because I then realized, you know what? If you don't touch someone physically, you may think that you are actually all right. But I'm not so sure whether it's obvious that the language that you use is not capable of actually constituting harassment or just being inappropriate or being unwanted attention on the part of your partner. So shouldn't we try and unpack what you mean by careful language? Because presumably you can sit in one room, I can sit in the other room, you can say no the first time, but what language I use can still make the difference between whether or not the other person feels that there's unwanted behavior on my part, even if I'm not touching them physically.
Look, I think very interesting.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, perspective that you're bringing to the table. My opinion on it is, if you are dealing with a child, right, I do not think that the same rules should apply socially as if you are dealing with an adult. Because obviously the child is much more fragile and is much more susceptible to influence, especially if you are considered, like, for example, you are a father to the child. You are obviously a respected figure. And so, in my mind, the rules totally change. You cannot now try or even...
Yeah, but let me... don't be distracted. Hold on, Kosana. You're missing the point.
Yeah.
In the interest of time, let me get you back to the main point. Assume it's two people who are both adults. They don't know each other. It's at the bar, and they're just having a conversation. If you say no after I mack on you, then the question is, is it not possible that some of the language that I might use to persuade you could be inappropriate? So I don't have examples up my sleeve. I'm just saying it can't just be good enough to say that as long as you're not touching, persuasion is okay. Because we've got to talk about what kinds of words, phrases, and language is okay.
Look, I would agree with that.
If you want me to give an example to make it concrete, here it goes, right? So you say no. Hold on. Here's a scenario for you. I mack on you. You say no. I say to you, but I'm so wet right now. I haven't touched you.
Of course, that's inappropriate.
Well, okay. There you go.
But it doesn't... Well, maybe the question should have been, is it legal or illegal for someone to say, but I'm wet right now?
You see, the law's not going to help us, because I may not break the law, but I might behave unethically. This is why it's a complex question.
I agree. So I think maybe we should break it up to two questions. Is it legal or illegal? Of course, it's perhaps not illegal. Is it ethical or unethical? It is not unethical. Right.
Interesting question. Bashle, how might we negotiate this one? Pardon the pun on negotiate.
How did you see?
Good, thank you.
I'm good. Well, to weigh in on this. You know, it's difficult, and I love how everybody's dissecting it and trying to find a solution. But enthusiastic consent. The person's going to not jump up and do a cartwheel and clap hands and say, yes, let me do this. We know that most women, and as we can agree that they are sexual beings, but are not very explicit. You know, they don't tell you these things, you know. So there is a little bit of, Oliver is right about that, you know. So they're not going to jump up and down and say, yes, let's do this enthusiastically. Obviously, there's a little bit of that element of shyness and whatnot, and we've seen that. And now, if you say you need consent, I mean, the only way to protect ourselves now as guys would be to carry around a consent form for her to sign before, because there's no way that you can actually prove that. There's no way.
And even the consent, even the consent form won't get us very far, because you can withdraw consent, which is why the legal instruments are, they only get you so far. You know what I mean?
And you know what I can say, right? And Oliver knows as much as we know that chances are, if this goes ahead, he's, I mean, that's you're looking at a record here. He knows that we'll probably be sharing a prison cell together sometime soon.
Yeah, interesting
that's
one.
That's the only
yeah,
way.
Okay, let's see what others think. 20 minutes before 10. Okay, 18 minutes before 10. Can women please call in? Can you actually answer this question in part? I mean, obviously, it's not only in the context of heterosexual interaction that it arises, but that's how some of the men have been framing it. And women are often the most, well, not often, invariably the ones who are the most vulnerable when there isn't consent being respected on the part of men. But I'd love to hear from some of my women listeners on this particular question as well. I mean, I've had at least one person on Twitter saying, Eusebius, I am a woman, and as a woman, justice, absolutely. I say you are right. There's nothing wrong with a little bit of persuasion as long as it's done right without some form of abuse. You know, how long is a piece of string? It's that's the thing. We can all have clear-cut cases of when the language will be harassment. We can have clear-cut cases of when it is just play, it's just macking, and then there is that horrible gray area in between. And how one negotiates that, I'm not quite sure. One response on Facebook from one of my favorite Facebook friends, Kevin, says, my response to the guy would simply be, stop thinking with your genitalia. I don't think your advice is actually helpful on this occasion. Very often, that's the right response to men who want to possess women's bodies. 99% of the time, that's helpful. I think anyone who listens to, I don't know, is it just me, guys, in a good mood? I think anyone who listens to Justice's Call will realize that's a man who is truly progressive and wants to make sure that he's not a rapist. He wants guidance on this question. I think it is fake virtue signaling to simply say, don't think with your genitalia. I actually think on this occasion, we should actually answer him and engage him within the spirit with which he asked a really interesting question. Play is an important part of human interaction, right? So how do we square play, which we presumably don't want to chuck out the window entirely, with the fact that enthusiastic consent is also what we want to get boys and men to accept is something that they should take to heart when they are negotiating relationships? And I think it's a serious question and an interesting one as well. Tracy, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Eusebius. I want to just say that I sometimes feel quite sorry for men, but not for the reasons you've expressed. and I want to thank Justice for his call, because we need to talk about this. Men are reaping what they've spent centuries sowing, which is to describe women who are enthusiastic about sex as sluts. So we have a choice. Either we are sluts,
are frigid.
We're potentially being raped. Mm. And at the end of the day, I'm an enthusiastic sexual partner. I have absolutely no difficulty telling a man what I want, when I want, how I want. And it can be very sexy. It's very sexy when a man whispers in my ear, do you like this? Show me where you want me to touch you. Show me what you like. It doesn't make sex any less sexy for a man to let me take the lead and for a man to let me show him what I like. But when women are constantly told that they shouldn't be like this, it becomes very, very difficult. And it's something that I'm trying very hard to raise my daughter to be aware of, that she is responsible for her own sexual pleasure. And sexual pleasure is a wonderful part of any relationship. And we need to raise our daughters to be more confident about taking charge of their sexual pleasure so that we don't have men with this dilemma. Because I can guarantee you, if Justice and I were to embark on a sexual relationship, he would not enthusiastic consent when he saw it. There would be no ambivalence. But it's something that I only learned in my 30s, when I had to kind of shuck off all of these societal expectations placed on women. So I do think it's an important conversation to have as to how to recognize enthusiastic consent. But I think we also need to talk about how to be enthusiastic.
Yes.
Women need to have this conversation with each other. Mm. They need to have it with their daughters, and they need to have it with their sons, so that we no longer have these sexual relationships, which are a whole mess of mixed signals, yeses and noes. We should be, just as much as we can generally recognize when somebody is sexually attracted to us, we should be able to recognize the signs when we're about to embark on sex.
I love you, Tracy, but you know that already.
Love you too. Have a great day.
Word and tone perfect. Word and tone perfect. I can summarize what she says, but why should I mansplain a woman's brilliance? 13 minutes before 10.
702 and Cape Talk. Open line.
Bianca, good morning.
Good morning, Miss CBS. I hope you're well. My comment actually links in perfectly with the previous caller's comments, and that's with regards to the fact that we are not nearly where we need to be, where females can accept their own sexuality. But on top of that, irrespective of whether the lack of enthusiastic consent is due to the fact that I'm too shy to admit I actually want the sex, or if it is because I don't want it, that is not the most important thing for me to think about here. It is the response of the partner. If a partner storms out of the room because I did not give enthusiastic consent or because I said no, I would be really offended. Whereas if he said, okay, that's fine, I understand, would you like to watch a movie rather, or whatever a positive response may be, that would be more acceptable and then might lead to on the second or third or fourth date to sex at the end of the day.
Sure, I hear you. Thanks for that, Bianca. Thanks so much for calling in. Sureshni, an old friend, comes for a visit.
Hi, Eusebius. You know, I love this term, enthusiastic consent, but we need to marry it with an enthusiastic no. I think as women, we're very socialized to be agreeable. And in a situation where a guy's maybe taken you out, bought you a meal, bought you drinks, and you're having a pleasant conversation, and suddenly now the issue of sex comes up, and he wants to go further, you might find if women could say no, learned to say no very loudly, earlier on in the picture, rather than wait for it to become so much that now this person is not listening to no. But we need to know our minds better, and we need to be comfortable to be disagreeable.
I couldn't agree with you more. I absolutely couldn't agree with you more. And I think it is the flip side of the coin that Tracy just spoke to. Whether we talk enthusiastic consent without being slut-shamed, or enthusiastic no without being told that you are frigid and a man-hater, both rob women of the full range of emotional expression and expressions of autonomy that are routine for us boys and men.
Absolutely. And I think we need to re-socialize women. And I know from my generation, we were not socialized to deal with the situation, as it is today, where so many women are being raped and men take such liberties. And obviously it was happening then too. We're just raising the issue now in this generation. And I think we need to bring up a new lot of women who are more conscious and aware of their own needs, their own desires, and the fact that no man has a right to their body, even if everything was pleasant up to that point. Because, you know, being raped by a stranger is not the same as being raped by someone who you kind of know, you thought you were comfortable with, and maybe you even wouldn't mind having sex with them, but not right now.
Ah, Sureshni, you turned me on with your excellence. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, CBS.
Cheers. Bye. Have a beautiful day. Sibongile, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. I totally agree with the whole discussion around women and giving them agency and us having autonomy in that moment. However, what I want to add is that for men, they need to be more in tune and aware of the moment as well. And it's just basic human decency to be aware that when you say something, somebody is uncomfortable. All you have to do is just ask, are you comfortable right now? And sure. I don't understand why that is a problem.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It's so simple in my head.
I hear you. I hear you. Okay. Spot on. Thanks, Ibongile. Have a lovely day. Pius?
Hi, CBS. Morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. I've got two comments. The first one is on structural impediments to one's development and progress. There will always be structural impediments, but what I believe in is that if a man violently says no to poverty, the mind will seek and explore all possible sustainable solutions. And that's what I believe in. My second comment on enthusiastic consent is in two ways. If it's a new relationship where you hardly know this person, when a woman says no, it is no. Stand by that. So there's no need to persuade, because obviously there's a thin line between persuasion and coercion, and you don't want to be seen to be coercing the person into what they don't want. But if it's an old relationship, like my wife, and then she enthusiastically says no, rather than persuasion, I rather want to go the route of negotiation, because I know much about her. The angles where I could bring up to negotiate. And if that doesn't work, then yeah, I raise my hand. Remember, women are also very and it's not condescending, but sometimes funny. You hear, oh, because I said no, you're just walking away. So you're not even trying. You know, something like that. Because I said no, doesn't mean you don't need it that much. You're just running away. You're walking away. So. I'd rather, if it's a old relationship, I'd rather go to the negotiation.
The line's not great there, Pius, but I heard what you had to say in both scores. I'm only going to engage in the first one because I don't need to have a view on everything that you guys say. On the first one, no, man, I don't agree with you. I know you mean well, but you are still within the psychology of thinking that people can think themselves out of poverty. If you violently resist your conditions, then somehow your mind will just expand and you will come up with creative ways to have bootstraps that you didn't have isolo. No, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. You've got to dismantle the inequalities that are built into the system. Institutional racism, institutional sexism, institutional forms of oppression, a corrupt state that means that the quality of education makes it harder for those of us who can't access private education of a better quality to better ourselves so that we're ready to enter the labor market. Those are the kind of things that we need to do. You can't think yourselves out of poverty. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's the same reason why, all these people who make a lot of money sometimes on the speaking circuit as motivational speakers, they should have been shot at birth because they're part of an whole industry that tells people that you can think yourself out of conditions of poverty. You can't do that.
702 and Cape Talk. Open line.
Do we have a voice note there, Abel? Let's play it and have a listen to it.
Well, Eusebius, don't be expecting us to be calling you, because the complexity of this question is such that we are questioning our own sexual conduct right now. Because yesterday you are going to be like, I want a guy who's manly man. Like, I want such an object of desirability that he pushed me against the wall. And, you know, I was like, this is how a man should handle me. Next thing, the same guy is doing the same push you against the wall thing tomorrow and choking you. And you are like, that's very rapey behavior. In the same sense that a guy is going to come to you and say, so-so, please. And you're like, oh, what a wimp. It's difficult.
Ay, ay, ay. I have the best listeners in the land, surely, eh? Shame, man. You guys are just so on point today. It's not that I am in a dwell or that I took something this morning, spliff. I've got plenty of thoughts, but I can't be padding your excellence. I'm just enjoying it today. I should give you part of my paycheck for today's open line. Mary, good morning. Welcome to the open line.
Hi, Eusebius. Can I first just say that I absolutely love your show, and I just think that you're one of the most intelligent people that I've ever come across.
Thank you for your kindness, Mary.
I want to say, I want to respond to the persuasion question as an English teacher and not as a woman necessarily.
Okay.
And say that, no, there is no room for persuasion. Because persuasion, usually, there are certain techniques that one uses to persuade someone, and usually those techniques are designed to stop them from thinking rationally for themselves and to access them on an emotional level. And it's, and persuasive techniques are usually very manipulative. Mm. Now, sometimes it's justified. For example, public service announcements, you know, trying to persuade people not to litter or not to be corrupt, that sort of thing. But I think when you can't, when it's in a relationship where someone wants to have sex and someone else doesn't and has said no, what the person's motive for trying to persuade the other person will not be because they want what's best for that person. It will be because they want what they want in that particular moment, regardless of what the other one wants. And so I just think that the answer to the persuasion question is no. I mean, if you ask her and then she says no, and then I think the answer should be, well, you know, let me know when you do. And that's fine. That's where it should end.
Okay. I hear you. Thank you, Mary. Okay. By the way, just in parenthesis, why did you want to wear your hat as a English teacher rather than as a woman?
Just because...
because of the language thing.
Language, okay. And persuasive techniques. And there are lots of persuasive techniques, and usually, especially emotive language, which is the favorite one, is designed to switch off the rational side of someone, the listener, and access them on an emotional level.
Even though we've run out of time, you just sparked so many thoughts in me. Can we have a quick 30-second exchange? I want to just challenge you as an English teacher.
Yes.
I severely doubt that any of the literature that you teach when it comes to novels that have an element of a relationship between characters, whether it be same-sex or heterosexual, involve two-sentence dialogues. It involves play. It involves courting. It involves being coquettish. And so I wonder whether the English teacher in you have encountered brittle interactions in literature between men and women en route to the bedroom?
Brittle interactions between men and women.
Let me let the cat out of the bag. In real life, yeah. And literature is yes. filled with this, there is yes. play that goes on between adults. And play doesn't yes. involve two sentences.
Yes. I agree. I absolutely agree. Although, what I'm thinking of is disgrace. Jane Coetzee's Disgrace.
Great minds. I also thought about that
I'm
just
sure
now.
You agree.
Yeah.
And I was thinking a lot about the race question in that novel.
Yeah.
And because Melanie doesn't actually say no.
Yes.
Her demeanor says this is fundamentally undesired attention.
Yes.
And I from my reading of that book, I decided that
okay.
rape isn't determined by the response of the person being raped. It's determined by what's the motive in the mind of the person who wants to rape. Because what he's decided is that he is going to have sex with this person regardless of what they want.
Mary,
and so,
I totally agree with you. We'll leave it there. And all I can say is I am jealous of the children that have been taught by you. Thanks for calling in.